This is the beautiful game
described by two ugly gentlemen.
Glory to Columbus!
Who are probably sitting at a soccer bar near you.
McBride's in the box. A hard cross. McBride scores! It's 3-0 United States!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
Happy Championship Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
I'm not Beam.
No, you're not. That was a little jarring, but that is Austin Ward, who is joining us on this episode. Beam is off, presumably finding his liver or finding a liver transplant. I'm not sure, but I'm guessing Beam had a pretty good time at the game. I know I did. I know you did, Austin. So
I can confirm that Beam had a great time. We stayed together after that pregame edition of Bone and Beam. I'm not Bone on Saturday beforehand. still just me, Austin. And it's been fun to do the last couple of these tied to the championship game. But yeah, we did a number in the pub beforehand and we did not slow down. I've never watched a game from any of the standing room only parts in the new stadium, Bone, but it was so hard to get tickets in the Nordic. And then, you know, I was able to survive the ordeal, but then we had credentials. Like, let's just find a nice spot. So we were down there in the south end, like on the corner, you know, trying to see over some people. That was a new vantage point, but it was fun because at least we still got to stand and move around, and I needed to get the nervous energy out. But we kept that rolling, and then there were some helpful vendors right nearby.
Oh yeah, that's right. They don't shy away from having alcohol right near where people would be able to, like, oh, did you want to stand here and watch the game? That's great. How about a beer? Yeah. You're standing right next to where the beers are. It's good. I like that vantage point. It is a good place to watch the game, even though, of course, being in a seat would obviously be better. You just want to be in the building for something like that.
100%.
So, yeah, I guess I should start off there. Thank you for filling in for me on the pregame show.
That had to be such torture for you.
Well, here's the thing. Like, doing this job, I've come to realize, and I know you know this with doing... So, Austin, for those who listen only to soccer, neighbor Eric, and nothing else, Austin, in his day job, is wildly popular as perhaps the most trusted voice on Buckeye football and basketball news, but especially football. He has covered the team for, over a decade, I'm
guessing? Over a decade now. That's hard to believe, but yeah.
Right.
Since 2012.
So you know this from working in that arena, and certainly I do from doing my day job of working in a sports station. Like, when everybody else is having fun, you're working a lot of times for those type of, if you like those teams, if you like those games. So that's why for me, and I'm sure for you, when you actually get to enjoy this and you're not working on a day where there is sports stuff going on, that is a really good feeling. And I mostly got that. I did have that appearance that I had to do that I was glad to do for my partners at Valley Ford. But yeah, it was like, man, the timing could not be worse for this. I thought I had to be there from 2 to 4. And I thought, well, I'm going to miss the game. I'm going to not be able to get there in time. But it was only 1 to 3. So I did miss the pregame activities, which I would have loved to be a part of. But I got in around 3:30, so I was fully in the venue, fully to my seats, watching all the pregame, you know, when they brought everybody out, all that stuff. I was already there, had some food, had some drinks, so yep. That was good. But yeah, what an atmosphere that was on Saturday. That was something else.
Yeah, it was crazy. And, you know, it started early on. We got downtown around 1, and I think, well, usually this is so easy. We'll pull right down. I'm not even thinking about the difference in traffic patterns or how many people are going to be coming down or the march for LAFC that was then followed by, you know, the Columbus supporters groups. Like, you couldn't even, you know, get down towards the stadium. We just, you know, parked on Nationwide, hopped out of the car, and my wife drove away. And I'll just walk, no problem, and take in some of the atmosphere. It was like, everything was different down there. That was great. The vibe was off the charts. Both fan bases were behaving. One smelled worse than the other. You can figure out who that might have been.
Hey, I mean, listen, there's a lot of things that have become legal recently in the state of Ohio, so smells are now a thing we're going to be taking in a lot more around the stadium.
And I have no issue with it whatsoever. I'm glad that it was legalized in the state. That's mm-hmm. that's great tax income. Yep. But I wasn't aware that that was LAFC's entire reputation. I've fallen out of touch with every supporters group around the country. Like, we were way more involved in Crew Union and that stuff than we had a kid and work and all the other things made that less of our social calendar. But I get down there and I'm right by the LAFC group that they're standing under the bridge for several minutes. I'm trying to get by and it's pungent. But then I also see, like, one side of a supporter scarf LAFC, whoever. And then the other side says, where to weed at? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's apparently a big part of the supporters
culture. I didn't know it was
that.
It was so important to LAFC, but yeah, apparently yeah. It was.
Well, you know, it was funny because we, after the game, which, of course, just in case you haven't guessed, the only thing we're going to be talking about on this podcast is the Crew winning their third star MLS Cup champions now, and I presume forever. We'll just never lose again. But that's
Amen.
That's all we're going to talk about on this. So if you were hoping for big breakdowns of Premier League stuff, I get that. That's not going to happen on this show. Not this time. Maybe sometime soon. But today it's all about the Crew. We came down the steps behind the Nordica into the beer garden after the game. And as we're walking down, we just all got hit in the face with the vapors of the afterglow. And one of my buddies, Chris, is just like, hey, man, it's legal now. You know, it's like, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Like, I didn't think about it. And then it hit me right in the face. It's like, of course, we're going to be celebrating. People are going to be celebrating all different kinds of ways. And with legalization happening, that's one of the ways. Yeah. So, yeah, it was. But that's, I'll tell you what, the LAFC fans, they came out and we'll say plenty about them. The funniest thing to me the night before the game was seeing Will Ferrell at Gasworks. Like, I remember when I was 19 and heard what bars were and found out some of them let you in before you're 20. Like, great. I'm glad you found a bar. My favorite thing about, and I know not all these people are like this. Not everyone who comes from the West Coast is just a coastal elite. But as someone who grew up here, grew up in the Midwest, you hear a lot of time about that. There's no culture. There's no nothing. You don't know what anything about a real city. Come out somewhere where they actually have, like, traffic and all this crap, I guess, that makes you a better human somehow. But then when you come to the Midwest and you go to one of the, like, most Midwest-y college-y bars that you can find, and you're like, yeah, we figured it out. We got it. It's like, you didn't actually.
No.
You complete. Now, I'd be
you
happy.
You missed the point.
Right. I'd be happy to help. If they had asked and said, Columbus fans, we are humble LA people who just want to come and enjoy a good time. Where's a good place to go? I'm sure Crew fans would have said, you could go here. You could go there. We'd have bought them drinks. It's not about gatekeeping Columbus or anything like that. It's just, Don't look down your nose at people from the Midwest when you come to the Midwest and then go to essentially the Applebee's of the Midwest. Like, Gasworks is fine. It's not bad. Don't tell us you know culture and, like, you got all these cool places and you come here and you go to a fine, regular old establishment. Nothing special is what I'm saying.
Yeah, if Gasworks wants to sponsor the pod, sure, we'll say nicer things about it. But if without that having been the case, I remember I came on a trip up with my wife before we lived here. And I don't know, I think we went to, there was an Ohio State game, there maybe a Jackets game, I don't remember what it was. And she's like, oh, this place is really nice, and it's right by the arena. And I'm like, that's the only time I've been there. I didn't ever go back. Like, there's so many other things in the city to do. And, like, if you had said, hey, I don't know, I'll just pull one out of my hat. Land Grant.
Yeah.
There's going to be Crew supporters there on Friday night. They're more than welcome to welcome some LAFC fans, share some drinks, and, like, go out there in the beer garden. It was a fantastic weekend.
It was, oh yeah,
just be outside and all the other stuff that's going on there with the winter garden and all the, like, do that. That's, yeah, that's what it's actually like in Columbus.
Well, even right there, isn't Novak still there? That, yeah, place, like, right across from the convention center, that I think is even a better spot. Like, for me, like, there's tons of great places down, even in that little
Betty's
area. Betty's is right. Yeah, go there. Go on Thursday. Find out what that's all about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, there's, anyway, so the LA fans got in town on Friday night. I'm seeing all that, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I kind of, you know, again, I'm in the same boat. Years ago, I would have been out, too. I would have been everywhere, like, just trying to soak it all in. Wow. We had a choir recital that night, so I was at that instead, which was great. But also, we had that Saturday night, and my wife was like, it's okay. I know this is happening. Just go. Don't worry about it. So
that was the saddest part for me, Bone, with our family. Like, it's always been so important. That's the thing that Allie and I do together, and she's like, you're not going to believe this, but Liberty's dress rehearsal for the Nutcracker is Saturday at like 2:45 or 3.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what do you want to do? The tickets that I wound up purchasing through the hellish nightmare that was Ticketmaster, they were over $300 a piece. So I'm saying, well, let's make a decision here, because we're heavily invested if you're going to go. I don't know if I'm going to make it in time. I do want to be part of the Nutcracker. Other people volunteered to take Liberty to the Nutcracker to help her out. They know how important it is to her. And she said, well, this is the situation. I can't help the timing. So she missed the game. So I was watching it with Beam and Meredith and not Allie. And that's, I can probably count on one hand the number of times that we've been apart for a crew game. And so that part did kind of stink, especially with the post game celebration. So, it took a couple hours before I got back with her, and we certainly ramped it up there with celebratory beverages. But like, for her not to be there, that part, like, you did make it to the stadium. She didn't. And that I kept thinking about that and how, like, there are other fans probably in her boat that just weren't able to make it work because of the tickets, because of other responsibilities. And I can't even, like, 10 years ago, there's no way I could have imagined.
No, right. Well, and that's, I'm sure you feel similarly given that aspect of your guys' relationship. But for me, going to a crew game, there's this family aspect to it. And I don't just mean my own family, although there is that.
Right.
I've taken my kids to games. My wife's gone to games and stuff. But it's also, for me, a little bit, I grew up in Columbus, have lived here my whole life, never moved away, any of that stuff. But if someone maybe came from a smaller town and moved to Columbus, or if maybe you came from a smaller town and moved out to New York or LA or wherever, like, coming back to the hometown, you may not see these people often or as often as you'd like, but when you're back, you're like, oh, there's so-and-so. Oh, there's such. And like, that's the way it is for me at crew games. No matter what else is going on in life, when I get back to crew games, I've been going for the better part of 20 years. So I will see people that I'm like, oh, hey, so that, like, having those moments of, oh man, you know all about this. You know what this is like. You remember these other times we've done stuff like this, or we've rooted for this team. Seeing people there, that, like, it was almost like a relief to see, oh good, you made it.
Right.
I know not everybody could, but the people that I did get to see that were there, it's like, oh, you made it into, that's awesome. Like, I know how much that means to you. I'm so glad you're here. I hugged, I think, every person I saw basically before the game, let alone after the game. It was, that's the part I will always love about going to crew games. So this was a great moment for the city to even get to host this type of thing. We had it in 2020, but of course, pandemic, most everybody was at home for that, I'm guessing. So this is the one where a good majority of the crew fans that wanted to go to games and that go to games often got to go to one, because the one in 2008 was in LA. So of course, there were plenty of people that went to that, but this was different. So this was a special thing for the city, just to even host it and have this game here.
Plus, I think there has to be something said about the way that experience has been enhanced even since 2020, when that wasn't even an option. But you look at that sellout streak that they have going at lower.com, and the investment that's been made since He Who Shall Not Be Named was forced out. I mean, whether they're diehard soccer fans, have been forever or not, whether they're just new people that are embracing the opportunity to be downtown, whether they, you know, whatever the case may be, you're seeing way more of those people than you ever did before, certainly at historic Crew Stadium. And over the course of the year, they saw some really good soccer, or they enjoyed the new venue, or they just liked being downtown, or it was it's an MLS Cup final, a cup final in Columbus, I got to go. Like, the demand, and then the people actually showing up, is different, and all that stuff. I mean, 2015 wasn't quite that way. I mean, it was a sellout game, but and I had a great time at it until 90 seconds in or less. But
you're right. I did gloss over 2015. I was at that game too, but that's same thing. Where it's like, we were all at that game, or a lot of us probably got to go to that one easier than even getting to this one.
Yeah, I don't remember having any difficulty, and I was still in, the Nordica for that game. Like, it was my season ticket, and I got it. The way they changed the things, I think, is probably in response to how much demand there were for tickets, even throughout the regular season for the crew. MLS did its best to capitalize, and did. It didn't hurt the atmosphere, in my mind.
Yeah.
I would have preferred to be in my normal spot. I would have preferred the schedule to have worked out where my wife could have been there. But inside, I mean, as I said before, the pregame was insane. Everybody was ramped up for it. The marches were great. The people that were out there on the plaza, the ones that came into the pub to listen to us, all of that was fantastic. And then in the game, it was as loud as can be from start to finish. So all of that is 10 out of 10, and the result was a cherry on top.
Yeah, it's honestly, it was this whole experience of getting to go. So I will tell my story how I got to go into the game. I'm sure, like a lot of crew fans, it was like all week long, it was touch and go. I had a couple friends who had bought tickets on SeatGeek. They were season ticket holders. Then they got the call from their rep that was like, hey, we can get extra tickets. Some of them bought or passed because they thought they had seats. And then those SeatGeek seats went away because they got revoked. And then, you know, again, everyone's trying to do the best they could, and they're trying to get to this game. And then, so it was like Wednesday afternoon where it's still like, I had just got a text from someone that was saying, hey, I thought I had a lead for you on a ticket. I have to use it now because my other seats got pulled away. Mm. So then it's that afternoon, like I got done with that text. I actually went over to Supporter Supply to pick up a few items, like just some clothing items and stuff, pick up some shirts for the kids. And then I'm leaving. There's a phone call from my buddy Blake Compton, who I've known Blake since the Hudson Street Hooligans were back when they were banging, for lack of a better term. That's how I got into supporters culture and all that was when the old stadium still had seats behind the goal, me and my brother Derek were there, and we would go off and on to early 2000s. Once I was 18 in 2000. So that was like that age range. That's where we kind of started going handful of times. But mm-hmm. there's a game in 2004, 2005. We were there and a bunch of dudes were just sitting there, shirts off, drinking and yelling at Dallas's goalkeeper, who I want to say maybe was Kevin Hartman. It was a former Kevin Hartman played for LA Galaxy, but I think maybe he played for Dallas. Anyway, whoever it was Kevin Hartman. Definitely. I don't remember what team he was playing for in that game. They were just giving him the business and we were laughing. And so we went up and talked to these dudes. There's six or seven of them. And one of the guys is Grant Thurmond and, you know, a bunch of other dudes, Cord, all these guys that became really good buddies. They are like, hey, we party right down the road here. We live off of Hudson Street. We walk over where the Hudson Street Hooligans. We drink at Ruby Tuesday. And so we were like, well, we'll meet you there. So we started going and meeting up with those guys. And of course that ballooned up. And then Blake was a part of that group. And Blake, you know, was the guy that you would see and get season tickets, or not season tickets. You go to the Nordica, you go to the tailgates, and then he would just have like a stack of 50 tickets, say, who needs one? And you give him $20 and you get a ticket because that was kind of the deal. And so now, fast forward, Blake owns a construction company, kind of has become like a legit, ridiculously good businessman, and is still a massive Crew fan. And so he called me up and said, hey, I've got a ticket for you because I wanted to bring in some of the Save the Crew people. And he felt I was a part of that, given the stuff on the radio. And I said, I didn't really do anything other than what any Crew fan would do in my position. But thank you. I will gladly take you up on that. And then I got a call like the next day from the radio station. Fish, our program director, was like, hey, you got a press pass. You got to go pick it up. And I'm like, now I have two ways in. I went from having no ways in to having two ways in. So, yes. Fortune smiled on me on that day. But it was very good to at least have both. Just to
MLS also wanted to make it really challenging for us on Friday. So Beam was like, hey, Fish has got us set up. We're actually going to do the show, because there was like all week. It was up in the air. They didn't know if we were even going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I got $600 on the line over here. I know that I know I can get in. And then he's like, go down. It's Friday morning. Beam texts me after the juice. And he's like, the guy said to go pick it up as soon as you can, anytime today. I'm like, I got in the car immediately. Like, I got to know that it's here. We hadn't sold the tickets yet. Allie hadn't finally made that decision for her. It's like, yeah. Well, I want to have that in my hand. And I show up to the window, first person, we don't have anything for you. Second person, no, we don't have a credential for you. I was like, okay, well, I mean, the Crew PR guy just said to come here and pick it up right here, right now. She's like, oh, well, we have this for the fan. There's, Austin Ward, Brandon Beam, Jonathan Smith. Yeah, they're all pending. We don't know if there's going to be enough seats in the press box. And I was like, well, cool, but I think none of us need seats in the press box. We don't care about that.
We just want to, be there to cover the game.
I'm like, I'm doing the pregame radio show in the pub. Like, I have to have it. And so, like, she's very nice. She wasn't argumentative. It wasn't her fault. But it was like, okay, well, why does everything have to be so difficult with MLS? That's our life, isn't it?
I know.
It's been going on now for not just 6 years, but certainly that's what immediately pops to mind. Like, it's always such a adversarial relationship with MLS and Columbus and MLS and Columbus fans and Don Garber. Like, the best chant of the whole night was booing Don Garber after the game. Like, we're skipping over everything that happened in between. Like, this is just Bone and I spilling all of our emotions about MLS Cup instead of talking about the game. So I'm sorry about that.
It's okay.
But I'm also not sorry about it because it was such a gratifying experience by the end. And going through all those things, I said it on the pregame show. It's such a Columbus Crew experience all around. Like, you're just going to keep getting setbacks, and MLS is going to make it hard for you to achieve your goals. And they want other teams to thrive in other locations. And yes, there's going to be setbacks and low points for the Crew, but then they just, that hardest working part, man, it applies to everybody here. And even when it's just trying to get in the stadium, you cannot stop Columbus Crew. Can't stop the fan base. And that's the part that's so incredibly validating.
Yeah. It is. And I will tell you that I do think, because there have been some Crew fans that were like, did they do this on purpose to make it tough on Columbus? I mean, can't rule that out. But
can't rule it out.
No. But here's the other side of that is there's a reason why, like, the Super Bowl, they announced that venue like 2 years in advance so that all these plans can be made. I love that MLS does this. I do think MLS could tweak their playoff system to say, let's maybe not have a three-game series to start off the playoffs. Let's have a two-week break in between the conference finals and MLS Cup. You can do a whole week of recovery for the team, and then you can have a week of media, and you can have, and then it gives you 2 weeks to get this crap sorted out. You can have the on-sale date go, like, push back a week. They could go on sale on a Saturday so more people could, like, not be at work trying to click around on a work computer. You know, things like that that would just be easier to do. And again, God forbid Ticketmaster, just if they could fall off the face of the earth or be shot into space, I would like that as well, because I do think Ticketmaster has some blame in this as well.
But a lot
of it is just the fact this is so quick. I do blame MLS for not being better at it. They chose to do it this way. They should be better at doing this on a week's notice, but the reality is, unfortunately, because of all those things we just said, it's going to probably continue to be a headache every year. So now, I think the good thing is, now we know.
Like, right.
Now we can kind of start to prepare and figure it out a little bit better as Crew fans. And I hope that MLS continues to get that and make it better. And good for the Crew. Their ticket reps did a killer job figuring that out, getting on the horn. I know the team did with the league to say, we've got to get this sorted out. You've got to fix this ticket code issue. And they did. And then we got those seats released, and a lot of Crew fans did end up getting tickets in. So season ticket holders deserve that. That's awesome. We're going to take a break, and we will actually then talk about the Columbus Crew defeating the Los Angeles Fail Club 2-1. Or what is it? Garber called them Los Angeles Football Craft.
Yes.
At that the Super Draft a couple years ago.
Yeah.
We'll
crushed
talk
it.
About it. Yeah, we'll see. Oh, he got crushed. We'll talk about all that when we come back. You're listening to Bone and Beam United with Austin Ward. You can always tweet the program at Bone Beam United. We will occasionally check it and or possibly reply to your tweets. I'm sorry that we're not as good as that if we should be. Also,
sounds like there's no guarantees on that.
There's no guarantee. Also, whatever podcast app you use, give us a subscription. If you haven't yet, just hit that subscribe button or the follow button. Sometimes it is on that. If there is a rating system and you want to give us a rating, we would appreciate that. If you don't, we understand, but that's fine. We're going to talk, of course, about the Crew. Beam, I'm sure, would love to be here. He is out on vacation, taking his time. He deserves that. And so Austin Ward is joining me, Crew fan extraordinaire, U.S. soccer fan extraordinaire, world traveler for soccer, right? You've traveled to multiple countries to watch the U.S. national team, correct?
We have most notably going to go with the American Outlaws, or traveling with them to Brazil for the group stage there. And again, like, we don't do it quite as much as we used to. Liberty is six now, so that's quite challenging. And we used to do several Crew road games a year as well, at least starting with Chicago, but, you know, then branching out around the country and opportunities to see them in different locations and see how those stadiums matched up with the original Erector set in Columbus. And and then now, you know, how much better lower.com is than virtually everywhere else. But yeah, and I think maybe people are listening to the podcast and like, maybe he can actually break down what happened in the game. No, I can't. soccer is still about the emotional part for me, and that's the part that I feel the most, know the most, talk about the most. Because like, and even in my day job with football, like the X's and O's part, I'm going to leave to the people who played it. That like, I can understand what I'm watching, certainly better for football. But even after doing this and traveling the world to watch the U.S. and traveling the country to watch the Crew, if you want me to do X's and O's for the Crew, I can't really do that. But I know beautiful football when I see it. I know good beer when I drink it, and I know great chants when I hear it.
So. Yeah, that's right. And we had all those things going Saturday at the LDC, or as Beam likes to call it, the Death Star. So let's talk about, like, the emotions and all that as the game kicked off. So pregame ceremonies happened. I know there was some concern from Crew fans. Are they going to let us do some of the stuff we do? Wise Men, of course, is a thing that we all wanted to hear. And it happened.
Yep.
And that was when I already was like, okay, all this ticketing stuff, all this concern, whatever it was, we got through it. Yet again, Crew fans persevered against whatever. I don't even think it was purposeful. I think it was just the way that happens, yep. You know? So we got through it, and Wise Men happens, and I'm like, oh, this place is ready.
Yeah.
This is going to be something. And then, you know, the opening whistle hits, and ball's in play. And I want to say probably within 30 seconds, ball gets played out, and it's like L.A. tried to do something, and the Crew thwarted it, and it went out of bounds, and it was Crew throwing. And the crowd was like, yeah, and I'm like, oh, boy, this place is going to explode if we can get a goal. Like, it's just everybody. And I mean, I couldn't sit down. I don't think anybody was sitting down for a very long time in that game. And so Crew kind of settled in. You saw that they were playing the way that Wilfried Nancy wanted them to play, which is, you know, from the X's and O's standpoint, the Crew like to have the ball.
Yeah.
LA does not like to have the ball. LA and a lot of modern teams now, they do the very German soccer thing of, we'll let you have the ball. We'll get it. We'll counter you, and we're going to go up and score. Got Denny Bawanga, who has, I think his total at the goal that he scored in this game, spoiler alert if you didn't watch, was 38?
I think it was 38, yeah.
In all competitions
this
year.
Insane season.
Ridiculous. You don't see that in MLS. I mean, this guy is truly a special player, but one of the guys on the team that had to, you know, mark him for a good part of that game was two guys, Mo Farsi and Steven Barrera. I thought did an excellent job of keeping him pretty much. I know he had the one goal, but you'll take that. If you can just keep him once on the scoreboard with this Crew team, the way they possess the ball, that's not bad. Like, and I think that plan went pretty well. But Marrera and Farsi, I thought, put in really good shifts, kind of bracketing him and doing a good job staying with him.
I thought Marrera had, I mean, a 10 out of 10 match performance. That was the task that was put on those guys in the back, and to mark him and to always be aware for that counter when LAFC would have opportunities like that. You cannot fall asleep on that. LAFC got a goal. I think we all assumed that they probably would. They have a lot of firepower. They're a very good team. They won the West for a reason. But Marrera, and I believe that the Crew worked pretty quickly to announce that he would be coming back on Monday or Tuesday.
That, like, they got that done.
Like, he earned that opportunity and is a key piece. And I don't want to skip ahead too much to the celebration, but I did go down onto the field afterwards, and like, that was a guy, Marrera, who was getting some of the most daps up and handshakes and hugs for the work that he was doing. I think everybody on that team recognized that, like, if they were going to win, yes, they were going to need Cucho to be Cucho. They were going to need playmaking from these guys. They were going to have to make the most of that possession and not be careless with it. And you knew that they probably would take good care of the ball with Darlington Nagbe and Aiden Morris there in the midfield. But it was going to come down to that defensive effort. If there had been a spot of bother throughout the season with the Crew, man, this team could maybe leak some goals. And you don't want to put Patrick Schulte in too many tough situations. And really, the Crew did not do that. And Marrera was such a key part of that on Saturday.
Yeah. He really was. And I think Steve Marrera is a guy that last year, watching him a bit, I thought, I didn't know how he would make the transition from outside back to essentially a center back in a three-man back line. I think that he actually flourishes in that role. I think it really works well for him. And he doesn't look very conventional. There are times kind of he's all like arms and legs. It's almost like there's no torso for him. And it's like watching him run sometimes, you're like, I don't know if this is working or not. But then suddenly he's dribbled through five people and he's made a pass. And then he's never really had that moment where he like finishes off that run and gets like a cool like return pass and scores a goal. But that's got to come before he leaves Columbus, I hope. Yeah. I hope next year he gets one of those early on in the season, because he definitely deserved it. But from a defensive standpoint, he is everything they need on that back line.
To me, fantastic. Yeah, to me, sometimes some of that disjointed stuff is watching him track back. It's like he is so athletic, and you can see it. And it's like, is he going to try and make this tackle from that angle?
How's he going to do that?
I don't know if I feel good about that, because that seems like it would have to be a penalty from where he is. And suddenly he's cutting around the outside, he's making the tackle, he's right on the ball, and he doesn't make any contact. I mean, Sometimes that doesn't matter if you're playing Cincinnati, but
you know. Yeah, that was one that that's partially what got me, was it's like, of all the people you've called this on, and he didn't actually foul him, but whatever.
Yeah. We can joke about it now.
Hey, don't forget who won the Supporters Shield. Oh. That's a really big deal. FC Cincinnati fans want you to know, in Europe, that's how they do it.
Mm.
Even though in Europe, they play home and away, and that's it. And you would have been relegated into the fourth division by now, so wouldn't even be talking about that. Whatever. Yeah, sure. Okay, fine.
Put the shield right next to the spoons. You're good to go.
One shield, three spoons. I don't know how many. I don't know what the conversion rate is on that. But
one more, and you can all just eat some soup out of it.
That's right. Exactly right. All four of their fans who stayed for the entirety of that 120-minute game because everybody else left. All right. So one of the things to talk about the defense, so Rudy Camacho, I thought, has really solidified things back there, and he's been great with organization. There was, on the first goal, Rudy Camacho actually had a part in this, if you missed that, because the Crew do the Wilfried Nancy thing, which is we're going to possess the ball to the point that we value it so much, we don't care if it's moving, we don't care if we're walking back toward our own goal, we don't care if our goalkeeper is just scooting it around back there in the 18. We're just going to kind of do that until you get annoyed with us and charge after us to get the ball, and then we're going to go get you. And so before that first, you know, sequence that led to the penalty kick, Rudy Camacho has the ball, and he just stops the ball and stands on it like he's taking a photo in a youth soccer league, just like, hey, how's it going, Mom? Like that, he just stood on the ball with his foot on it, and then, of course, LAFC, I think Vaylor, whoever, runs up towards him, and they all press up, and they got out of their shape, and all of a sudden, there's space behind their front line. And then we start playing the ball up the field. It ends coming to Rossi, who's at the top of the 18, and he tries to flip it over. I forget which defender it was for LA, but his hand goes up. It hits his hand. Penalty kick. That is called everywhere, every time, yep. Or at least it should be. I know some people are like, I don't know what a handball is anymore. I did. That was one. That's clearly a handball.
I don't even know how anyone can argue about it.
No.
It was so obvious.
Yeah. I mean, it hit his body first, and then it hit his hand, and he kind of moved his hand and pushed the ball away. Like, even if you want to say, well, it played his hand, and it hands out of the wrong position, and also he used his hand to kind of, like, flip it the other way. So, yes, that was clearly a handball. It was a terrible handball for them. And so my vantage point, I was above the Nordeca, where Blake Compton had put all his seats. They were actually on that party deck that used to be open, and then now they've turned that into, like, a reserved area. Yep. Well, that reserved area is where we were, and so I'm right above that goal, and, of course, I get the camera out, and I'm like, I'm going to video this because this, I mean, he's going to bury this. Yes. And he did, and it's Cucho, and just, like, watching him, I think sometimes on TV it doesn't do it justice. Sometimes the angle when you see it from the side, I don't know how anybody misses a penalty kick, because when you see how tiny a goalkeeper is, even a 6'5" lanky ass dude compared to that giant goal, like if you miss it, you've missed it. It's not, I mean, keepers can make great saves and all that stuff. They can guess the right way, but if you hit it the way you're supposed to, you're not missing those. And Cucho does not miss those.
He doesn't. Any corner is virtually impossible. And I think if anyone gets the opportunity and they haven't, like it's been since they were 6 years old, since they stepped on a soccer pitch or soccer field and stood in front of a goal, like, go do it if you get the opportunity, like, anywhere.
Yeah.
Just stand yourself and be like, well, there's no way that if you put that in the upper 90, no human is saving that. Or in the bottom corner, you know, where Cucho put that ball, like, it was perfectly placed. I don't know any goalie in the world that is stopping that.
No.
And he just doesn't miss.
And he is such, like, again, the power that these guys generate off of that. But also what was great, because I went back and watched this video on my phone a bunch of times, the moment he hits it, because he's already seen the goalies going the wrong way. The moment he's hitting it, like his foot has just, the leather's barely left the laces, and he's like hands up and running to the corner. Like he already knows it's in. It's no doubt. And that's what happens when you've done it a million times, and you know the feeling, you know how it's supposed to go. So he, now that all said, the pressure, this is a final, this is a thing. Ask FC Cincinnati what it's like to play in a final. Oh, they don't know because they've never made one. But ask LAFC what it's like to play in a final and feel that pressure. They played in three of them this year and couldn't get it done.
Yep.
That pressure is, even though you're at home, even though you know how good you are, and Cucho's a world-class player, came over from the Premier League, he knows what he's doing. That pressure is where we find out where these guys stack up. And he handled it, I thought, brilliantly. So that is not a nothing thing to make a penalty in an MLS Cup final, but when he did, the place erupted like I thought it would, and it was a blast.
Yeah, it should be. You do get credit for it. You have to execute in those moments. And I think that even in all of that buildup, sometimes when you're at home and you do have all the anticipation, you're going to win MLS Cup in front of the home fans, they're jacked up, they're giving you juice. Like, that can add to the pressure a little bit. If it takes too long for the goal, you can't get a breakthrough, you can't find it, you start spraying some passes or trying too hard. As you mentioned before with Camacho, like, that did not happen. That, again, that's another way that we can give credit to Wilfried Nancy in the way that that team was prepared for it. But they didn't feel flustered. It's like, ah, man, we didn't score right away. We could have done this in the first 2 minutes of the game. Like, you know, we had the opportunity to get on the front. But, like, there was no panic in that. There was no panic when Cucho's standing over the ball to take the penalty. But I think there was also another level for this team. All right, once they got that first one, it's like, this is not going to be LAFC's night. Like, they're going to ramp up some of the pressure. They're going to keep that possession. They're not going to stop. And I remember, I don't know if it was 35, 40 minutes into the game, you know, Beam was asking, like, what is the possession right now? And I'm looking at it, and it's like 75-30, yeah, you know, 75-25, something like that. He's like, it feels like more.
Yeah, it really did. It felt like LA, we were joking, are they playing a man down? Like, it felt like at times they just didn't have the same number of people on the field. Yeah. And that is a testament to, again, what all the smart soccer people would tell you, like, or a lot of smart coaches would tell you, soccer tacticians would say, is, oh, actually, you don't want the ball. You want the other team to make the mistakes. You want to capitalize. You want to put them in positions to screw up. And that's why in a cup final, if you've watched like a Champions League final, World Cup final, sometimes it is a 0-0 snooze fest.
Right.
Because both teams are like, oh no, you have the ball. We don't want to screw this up. And the crew and Wilfried Nancy have turned that on their head. I have seen international publications writing about how this is what soccer's supposed to be. Where is the joy? Where is the fun? Where is the, like, excitement to have the ball? Why has that left the game? The crew just proved in a cup final in a, you know, a real league. I mean, I get granted, it's not the Premier League, but in a cup final, they proved you do not have to change how you play to go out and win. You shouldn't be afraid of who you are. And I think that is just such an awesome thing to see the world acknowledging Wilfried Nancy. And he's got a big advocate, because I was also watching last night some Champions League coverage, and Thierry Henry's on the desk, right, with Kate Abdo and all the other guys on that desk. And they had Wilfried Nancy on to talk. They coached together in Montreal. Mm-hmm. So you will have an advocate for this style of play in Thierry Henry on the international stage. If Wilfried Nancy's profile's not there yet, don't worry. It's going to be.
Or worry
very much, because everyone is aware now that this dude is legit.
But that part is important, I think, to get to Beam Bone.
That's okay.
I'm Beam, not that's Beam.
Today, you're alternate universe Beam. That's okay.
That's right. Is that just the mentality of not making mistakes? And, like, you can play attacking, aggressive soccer and do the same thing. To the notion that you have to play defensively and counterattack to avoid costly mistakes is, I think, where teams get tripped up and hurt themselves. Like, you can execute as an aggressive team, and that's the same thing as not making mistakes. I don't know if that makes sense, if I'm describing it the right way.
No, it does.
If that's your style of play, like, you don't have to be conservative to avoid mistakes. You have to execute well. And so having Darlington Nagbe, having Aiden Morris connecting on 95% plus of their passes, like, you get to play your style. You don't have to be afraid to make a mistake. If that's what you're used to and you do it game in and game out, you know, thinking that it's a MLS Cup final, I don't know, we shouldn't take those risks. They're not risks. You've done it over and over and over. It's drilled into your DNA. They make these passes. They put inch-perfect balls. They let Cucho get into the box. Like, these are all things that got you into this spot to change your identity. You know, you can also win a cup by being a counterattacking team and sitting in defensively and bunkering in.
Of course.
If that's what you do throughout the year, teams do that. It's changing that philosophy based on one game that I think gets you into a situation that you don't want to be in. And the crew and Wilfried Nancy, that's the part that's so impressive. They they didn't make mistakes. They just continued to play it and execute the level that they already knew they could.
Yeah, that was the thing I liked coming into this game was it was LAFC does their thing. They do the opposite of what the Crew do. And my biggest fear was, what if we come out and LA is just on the ball and doing that stuff? Like I said, in the back line, they're just like passing it around, forcing the Crew to come out of their shape. I was worried that's what they would do. Instead, both teams were like, no, we trust what we do. And it, you know what, for a half, Columbus dominated. Then LA kind of realized they were LA and they had to, they're down 2-0. They got to do something. But I thought still the Crew didn't bunker. They didn't go wild with strategic changes in any kind. They still played their game. LA got a goal out of it, which is going to happen. But I thought that was the most brilliant part of how this all went was no one really added any wrinkles. We just kind of, the face cards were up. Everyone said, let's roll with what we got. And at the end of the day, we found out who won it. We found it was the Crew. To that point, though, to go around that back line now to Malte and Edmondson, that pass.
Oh, boy.
I know everybody's talked about it. I've watched a million soccer breakdown videos of like, no, you don't understand. In the moment, were you processing what was happening on that ball? Like, did you see it at all before y'all was like in on goal? Because I've heard a lot of people say, a lot of Crew fans who are like, I actually had turned around to talk to somebody and I just saw him like with the ball right in front of goal. And I was curious where you were when that all happened. How did you process when that second goal happened?
It felt more like to me that, so like, I think Taylor Twellman had a breakdown. Like, this is such a great team goal. You have to pay attention to the 15 passes before with the whole team involved.
Right.
And for me as a passionate, but casual soccer observer of the X's and O's, I'm like, it feels to me like the Crew are content to like get this to halftime up 1-0.
Like, yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. I was like, we're just going to kind of kick it around and see what we can do. And I was still riding high from the other goal.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, this is cool. We got the ball again. This is great. Did you see the pass at all? Like, what memory do you have of the actual goal happening?
So they're passing it around. They make one, you know, negative back pass. I don't remember who got it out there on the right wing, but I'm like, all right, this is the right time to go get Beam and I another beer. But okay, the buildup is coming. The great part about being in this spot where we were, where you could still see the fields, like, and the great, very helpful vendors around there on that south stands, like, okay. And then I see Malte put up. I'm like, oh my God, how did that ball get there? And then I could not process. The ball was in the back of the net, and I was like, was that, who was that?
Yeah, right.
No part of it. I remember the ball going in. There were LAFC fans that were down there. They were waiting in line to go to the bathroom. And I'm just like, that's two. That's two.
Oh,
that's two.
Yes.
So I saw it, but like I did not appreciate the sheer wonder of the buildup, or even how I sometimes, because of the Malte pass there, I'm not sure that Yaw is getting nearly maybe enough credit for the challenge of the finish. All of it was pure perfection and blitz and bliss, and then being able to like watch LAFC fans realize that all their hopes and dreams that they'd traveled across the country for were vanishing before their eyes was also even greater. So.
It did honestly feel like that second goal was it wasn't because you knew it was only 35 whatever minutes in the game, but you're like, oh my God, they are reeling.
Yep.
Like, they are getting smoked out right now. I don't know what else. Like, actually, I think on Twitter at the game, I said something along the lines of, we've put them in a yellow crock pot of flesh melting something or other, and they don't know how to get out. Like, they were just getting slow cooked down into a fine broth.
We were turning up the heat on the frog in there.
That's what it felt like. Yeah. At that moment, it was like, they have nothing for this team right now. They cannot stop us. We're going to win 5-0. I didn't know what was going to happen after that. But I, like you, was still kind of talking. We're all standing around, and I'm looking, and I see that they're possessing the ball. And then all I saw was just a parting of green and a ball just going on a singular track. And I see a Crew player running, and I see everyone at LAFC collectively going, oh, shit, like right at the same time. And I'm like, doing that. You know the feeling. Yeah. You're like,
Where did that come from?
But in my head, I'm like, just finish it. We cannot mess this. Like, look how brilliant. I didn't know who passed it. Yeah. I didn't know how it got there. I'm like, you got a golden opportunity. We cannot miss this. And how many times have we seen it? Not just in crew games, but any team you root for where you're like, if so-and-so could have just finished such and such chance, we would have won that game. Yep. Or if they would have just put this in. And so the fact that y'all in that moment, I know it's just reactionary, it's in the moment, but you can't tell me that a player doesn't process, like, I'm in the biggest game of my life possibly for him. I don't know every game he's played in, but I assume it's one of the top two or three, if nothing else. And he's in on goal, and he doesn't flub it. Takes his left foot, which easily could have tried to go outside or near post. Instead, curls it under him with the outside of the boot. He slips it under their keeper, who's a tremendous keeper. I mean, and still that finish is so good, to your point. I'm glad that you said that because we have, and Multi-Amundsen's pass is ridiculous. It is awesome. Yeah. It was cool to hear that, I forget who said it. Was it Aiden maybe? I think Aiden Morris said that he's watched those guys work on that in practice and it's like glad they could finally, you know, hit it in a game in that moment. But like they do that often. They know that they're aware that that's on. And then, of course, you go back and watch all the tactical stuff and you see the little things like Cucho has got Chiellini looking the wrong way because they have to pay attention. And then Giorgio Chiellini, good? Yes. One of the greatest defenders of all time is looking at the wrong guy.
Yep.
You've got Alexander Mattan, who was on a scrap heap of soccer, basically, this time last year, now is making a movement that gets there. I forget who was playing up there, but when he moves out and kind of becomes like a square option for Amundsen, that's suddenly caused everyone to kind of go, oh, they're going to play square. Like they just, you lulled them to sleep. You got them to think they're just kind of kicking the ball around, and they're trying to think, maybe we should jumpstart this. Maybe we should go attack those guys in these little kick around square ball fest they're doing. And then suddenly that moment where they all are like, let's go get Alexander Mattan. The pass doesn't go to Mattan. It goes behind. And you see Hollingshead is like, I mean, you see him. I've like watched it frame by frame. He is completely committed to sprinting up and trying to attack that pass that he thinks is going to Mattan. And then Yaw is like 100% charging the baseline, the end line. And they could not be going in more opposite directions. And then Hollingshead has to like turn around and go, oh crap. And he's three steps behind and he's in. It's just, it's brilliant soccer. It's chance taking soccer, risk taking soccer. And that's what Wilfried Nancy wants. Like it's very brilliant strategically and tactically, but it's also executed so well and no one's afraid to do it. All those players were like, yeah, we don't care if we mess this up. We're going to just do it again.
And I think that's the beauty of it. When we're talking about the way that the crew played, the aggressive style and the way that Nancy coached, you know, LAFC, they've been in other big games. That square, that's the easier ball. That's less risk. That's the high percentage play. That's probably what they're going to do. But Columbus trusts its players. They say, as Aiden said, talking about practicing and executing and waiting for an opportunity to do it. And then not being afraid. You shouldn't be afraid to make a mistake. If you're trying to win the game on the front foot, then that's the ball that had to be made. When you're taking the lower percentage play and in the square ball, you're also you're decreasing your own odds of scoring a goal.
Yes.
So LAFC expected that, and you get to go execute and perform something that you know that you've done in practice and repped it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
The cup is just your opportunity to put that practice and that preparation into winning something of tangible value. And so the not being afraid part, it really can't be understated. You have to go out and win a cup. That's why you see all these horrible finals.
Oh,
where
brutal.
Oh, we'll get to stoppage time. You know, maybe we'll push for one. I don't know. Shootouts. And then no one will feel bad. You know, just it's a coin flip and it happens. Like, no, you don't get handed the cup in any cup.
Yeah.
Like, go earn it.
And Wilfried Nancy right now is getting all the praise, as he should, for this game plan, right? But I hope people understand that by deciding to go about it this way, he opened himself up to losing 3-1 with terrible turnovers and getting just countered to death by LAFC. And then everyone going, Wilfried Nancy couldn't adjust in the big moment, he should have been smarter there. He should have not. He can't be that idealistic. He opened himself up to all kinds of, well, that was a nice thought, but that'll never work. So he took risks.
Yeah.
Like that. That's his whole philosophy, is you have to be courageous. You will never do anything if you're not brave. The statement that's been floating around, which I actually wrote on our sheet as impossible is nothing. That's not what he said. He said impossible is an opinion. Again, are you coaching my soccer team or my life right now? Like, this is such great motivational stuff. But
both.
He's talked a lot about courage and how you have to not be afraid. And I think that's what the whole theme was for this team, was let's not be afraid. Let's do these things. Like you said, because you play that ball, you give up. Let's say that you just play that ball and you mishit it from Amundsen, goes out of bounds. Now you've had possession for a long time and it did nothing, you know, or maybe it created. But the possession with Nancy's system is always, we're doing something purposefully to draw you out. How many times have we felt like maybe watching, not to criticize Craig Berhalter, he's a great coach in his own right, but Caleb Porter, same thing, where we would have that empty bucket possession. You just kick it around the back line and then kick it back around and kick it back around. And you're like, what are we doing? This is just, there's no reason. There's nothing to this. The chances that the Crew generate, they scored more goals than anybody in MLS because that possession isn't pointless. It's not just to like kill time or to make you frustrated. They're looking for things to say, if this guy bites and that guy bites, then we do this. If they don't, then we go over here and then this is on. And then I will move over here. The off-the-ball movement for this team is ridiculous. Like, that's where it takes Cucho, who is brought in to hammer goals, making the right movements. Matan knowing, hey, I'm going to go out and move this way. This is all part of a plan to get these guys out of their defensive. It's just brilliant. It's so brilliant, and I'm so glad it worked. And if you haven't, go listen to, like, MLS Extra Time Radio. Go listen to those guys who are soccer nerds, Matt Doyle, those dudes. Yep. They are gushing about this. They're like, they can't stop talking about how brilliant it is. And I just love that it's our team. It's not somebody else's team. So that's
amen.
So,
but I can't believe that you tried to bring Greg Berhalter into this conversation and ruin my day.
I'm sorry.
How dare you, sir?
I'm sorry.
This is a celebratory pod.
I'm sorry I did that. Let's talk about the celebration. So what did you do after the game?
So we stood around there for the post-game festivities in that same spot. I couldn't believe it. You know, finished off another drink there with Beam and his wife and another friend who he got in like randomly 30 minutes before the game. This guy had been at Land Grant. He's like, the tickets were too expensive and somehow one didn't get scanned. He sent it out. I don't know. So I'd met this guy and we hung out. And then I was like, you know, Beam, we've got our credentials. Like, why don't we just go down there? And
good call by you. I had my credential and totally forgot about that option.
And he's like,
did not do
that.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know. You know, Meredith's gonna, she's driving. So, you know, we're probably going to get out of here. So the onstage presentation and all the singing and chanting and arm waving is done. And I'm like, well, screw that. I'm going. And so I try to go down through the stands. These people are like, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, I'm just trying to get to the press conference.
Yeah.
I'm lying about it.
Yeah, of course.
She's like, no. Like, I'm like, okay, well, where do I go? I've never covered a game there. I've never covered any part of the Crew. And I go to the elevators. So go down to the, you know, fancy suites and then go through the tunnel and like out by the locker room. I'm like, okay, fine.
Yep.
So, you know, I'm in the like, you know, 19 or the 2014, like, Glidden warm up sweatshirt. Like I've had a number of beers and I'm just like trying not to talk to anybody. I've got the credential on, you know, Allie's not there. I'm just alone. I'm not going to go like pretend and try and talk to these guys on the field. This is their moment. I saw Adam King and a few other people they're working. Like I messed with them for a couple seconds, but then I just stood on the end line by the tunnel and I must've watched it for an hour as the guys kept celebrating, kept hugging each other. Their families are coming out there. They're taking pictures by that archway. They didn't want to leave the field and I didn't either. So I've had these opportunities to cover big games, big wins for Ohio State football. And like it, I understand how special it is. And, you know, it's so cool to watch people celebrate a huge achievement like that. And when I'm in those situations for work, I've still got to try and talk to them and like, you know, interrupt a little bit of the moment for them to talk about it. Cause they want to have it memorialized as well. Like they're okay. Everybody's okay with that. And I watch those guys be generous with their time with TV for MLS.com reporters, for whoever else that was down there, getting pictures taken, celebrating with the fans down there in the North End. And I watched it until, gosh, I don't know, almost 8 o'clock. It started raining again and it was getting cold. And I waited till basically every player got in the locker room. I didn't know that Aiden Morris went back out after everybody else was left. I think it's over. They're going to do their thing in the locker room. Everything that was out on the field, I just stayed and watched as much as I could. And I'm like, all right, and then that's it. And then after that, Ubered back up to my neighborhood, finally caught up with my wife. We had a number of drinks and talked about the night. They'd gone to a watch party at SIP, somewhere in particular, Bruins, right by our house.
Oh, love SIP. Nick Gallo, my guy.
Yes,
good dude.
The best. And I don't remember them ever having a watch party for the crew, but they did. So I had several other friends and my in-laws who watched it there. They won a bunch of sweatshirts. They felt good. They'd had, drinks in the pizza up there. And then we kept that going until pretty late. I mean, we let Liberty and her friends stay up until like 11:30. Probably had to regret that a little bit because she did have the nutcracker the next day. She wound up taking a nice long nap afterwards. But like, yeah, I didn't want to disrupt it. I didn't want to be part of it. I wasn't in a state to interview anybody anyway when I was down there on the field. But it's like, I'm here. And I'm not with like Beam left. Allie's not there. Like I want to be part of this for as long as I can and watch it and just like remember it because 2015 sucked so much. And I remember being dejected and wanting to get out of that stadium as fast as possible. But I wanted to be there all night on Saturday.
Oh yeah. And I think that's what I took away is I was hanging out with my buddy, Chris Blaine, who was up the same place. Blake was up there who I've known. So many other people, though, like that I've known for the years and got to hang out with and spend some time with. But a guy that I ended up in the second half of this game, I ended up sitting with or standing with Dan Stanek, who is crew fans might know Elias Stanek or Alex Stanek. Mm-hmm. They're both on Twitter and X, and they're very active on there as crew fans. Elliot actually works in the team shop now. Both of those guys have had years of working in the Nordeca supporters culture, all those things. So Dan is their dad. He's a huge sports fan, big Buckeye fan. Dan and Elliot and I go to the Indy 500 now. We've gone the last couple of years. We've kind of got a little group going, go out for that. So he loves auto racing. Elliot loves Central Ohio. I know Alex does too. Dan, they all love Central Ohio sports. So the second half of that game, we're just standing with each other. And Dan and I are different people. When the final whistle blew, Dan is just like, yeah! Yeah, like he's happy, right? And I'm happy too. But he's like, he can't stop like just clapping and jumping up and down, and like the energy is there. And I'm next to him weeping.
Yeah.
Like just like this poet coach is talking about brilliance. It's all happened. This fan base that had all this tribulation, even getting to this game, was a representative microcosm of the bigger thing of always being a crew fan, and we told everybody to shove it. And in that moment, it just felt so vindicating to be a crew fan watching this and knowing Don Garber's going to have to talk to these people and knowing that the whole league has to bow down to the crew for a year.
Yep.
For a year. All we're going to hear about is how, yes, the defending champs are doing this. The defending champs are doing that. That star is going to be over that. They can never take it away.
Nope.
There's nothing they can do. They can change the logo 72 other times. The star is still going to be there. So that moment just hit me really hard, and I actually did. And I usually try to compose myself, try to, like, think of something good or funny or whatever. And, like, this was good, but you know what I mean? I try to – but I got interviewed by MLSsoccer.com. And that was what I told Charles, a reporter that I talked to, who he was like, so what did you feel? I was like, I didn't want to stop whatever was going to, like, whatever emotions were coming out. I just wanted to let it happen for a few minutes. And so I did. And I just kind of stood there and I'm like high-fiving people and kind of smiling through tears and all that. But I was just, I had to like take my scarf and I'm just basically like wiping my face because I was just bawling. I felt so much relief that this happened and so good for all the crew fans. Everybody deserved this. So that was... It was really special to see. It was really special for that whole family aspect, too, for this team. And I just thought it was a brilliant thing. And also knowing you don't know when you're going to get back here.
No.
I mean, we won MLS Cup in 2020, and we did it in a pandemic year. You beat what was hoping to be the two-time champ, Seattle. Beat them 3-1, right? 3-1 to 3-0.
3-0.
3-0. That's right. They didn't score. And so, like, I would have thought next year, well, we're going to just smoke everybody again.
Yeah.
Didn't make the playoffs, right? 2 years in a row, we didn't make the playoffs. And then now you're back. So I don't think that's likely to happen this year, but one thing that 2020 taught me was I'm going to live in the moment with this one for at least another few months. Like, I'm next season starts, I'll start thinking about when I see roster moves, when the new jersey, I'm sure they're going to unveil the new jersey with the new logo or the new star. I keep saying new logo.
I hope it's a new logo. Let's.
I will say, I've kind of said this to other places, I've made my peace with the Carabiner logo, and here's why. As much as I doubt it's going to change. But two, now this one has some history. So it's when you win an MLS Cup with that logo, it makes me hate it just slightly less.
It's entrenched in history. Yeah.
I get it. If anybody else is not on that same plane, I totally understand. I'm just telling you, you will see me wearing it. I have not bought anything with that logo.
I haven't either.
I will now. Like, I will buy something with that logo on it, whether it's the new scarf or the championship t-shirt. I will probably buy the jersey that has the three stars on it. I will probably want that. So I'm just saying,
that's the backdoor way that the Haslams got people to accept the logo change.
Well, you know what? Change it as many times as you want if you're going to put a championship over it every time you change it. That's what
it's like. Well,
if you go out and buy $10 million players and put a brilliant coach from France on the sidelines who wins this games while he's quoting poetry, great. Then change the logo again, just as long as you keep winning. That's what I care about.
If you want official championship merchandise, guess what? You have to buy the Carabiner. You're stuck. You thought you could get away with it forever, Austin Ward. You're wrong.
Yeah. By the way, if you're not going to do that, Supporters Supply is 100%. The place they got. They have so many good things over there.
They did a fantastic job. We had debated going down to Cincinnati for the Eastern Conference Final. It's like, it's going to be too difficult. I was going to have to be back here on Sunday for the college football playoff selection and the Cotton Bowl as it wound up for Ohio State. Let's just find somewhere to go. Supporters Supply did a great job hosting with Parsons North for Cincinnati, so we'll forever remember that. I already had their gear. They're great people. They're great crew fans. They make good products, and they were giving a bunch of it away, and obviously everything that happened at Parsons North in the second half was unforgettable as well. So
yeah, I can't imagine being there with all the crew fans. We were watching that one at home, and it was stressful but fun and awesome. And that's the thing, man. This season, I don't mean to be Stefan from SNL, but this season had it all. Like, you had the early season part where you're like, oh no, everything's falling apart. We trade away our captain. What are we gonna do? You go from that to the Schulte meltdown in Cincinnati early on, and you're like, oh great, what's happening there? To his redemptive arc and his redemption story, how great he's been pretty much ever since that. Then the playoffs. Who'd you beat? You beat Atlanta, who everyone we've had to hear ad nauseum about the five stripes and the eight bars and the 19, I don't know, whatever. All I know is zero championship this year. That's what I know for Atlanta. So you're stuck on that. Enjoy. But they beat them in a three-game series, but, I mean, destroyed them in basically two of those games. And then you had going to Orlando, which is one of those, like, why are they difficult for us to beat? Why is it tough for us to win on the road?
I don't know,
but they got over that hump, did that, and in glorious fashion with Cucho hitting that was where he hit that goal from midfield, right, to seal it up. Again,
it's pretty special.
Balls on that, too, to do that.
Yeah.
Then we all know about the Eastern Conference Championship. We know about how you won that. And now you beat another team that's like going for a dynasty, and they've got all these stars. And do you don't really know soccer, do you? Let me tell you, I'm LAFC. I've been here for 5 minutes. Shut up. Everybody can shut up. The Crew are a dynasty. The Crew are the ones with the three stars now. And I just want to point this out. Enjoy this moment. Live in this moment. There are four teams that have two stars. So next year, it's on site with Houston, Seattle, Sporting Kansas City, and San Jose. Also, Cincinnati can't win one. We're cover on that. Those four teams can't win one. We don't want that to happen. I don't want Atlanta to win another one just because screw them. I don't want any of the old, like Chicago, DC United. I don't want them to ever get another one. And DC United, we can't have them because we got to catch them in LA eventually.
Yep.
Like I said, live in the moment, but just know next year, that's my MO. It's like, got to go get that four. Like, got to go.
Hey,
let's get some more.
We've never gone back to back.
There's always time for new records to be broken.
That's right.
Because I heard a wise man say, impossible is an opinion.
Man.
So we'll leave you with
that. It's already on the t-shirts. You don't even have to print them. Supporter Supply has already done that
for you.
They
already done it. They already got them. Go get them. All right, Austin, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah.
Go Crew. We will have you in again probably before the season starts because we got to, lots to discuss probably with that. But
be here before we know it, too.
Yeah. If you're up for it, we'd love to have you back. So
I'm available.
All right. That's the best ability is availability. All right. We'll see you next time. Go Crew. Happy championship. Enjoy all this. We'll see you soon. It's Bone and Beam United.